This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. The first of what could be a massive influx of charter school applications have started rolling in. Last Friday was the first application deadline for charter schools that hoped to open in 2015. The growth comes at a crossroads for the charter school movement in the state. The 100-school cap was lifted several years ago, and 26 new charter schools are slated to open in 2014. WNC's education reporter Dave DeWitt joins us now. Welcome, Dave.
Hi, Frank.
We have to do the 101 on what a charter school is and how it relates to the rest of the school system. So tell us what a charter school is.
Yeah, sure. It's a public school that is begun outside of sort of the traditional public school system by any number of people. It could be, you know, could be an entrepreneur, could be educators, could be almost anyone. And will be almost anyone, as we see in the next couple of years. But they receive money from the state in terms of per pupil enrollment. So that's kind of the key to this is sort of how North Carolina funds its schools through the state level. You know, every LEA, they call it, and there's a lot of acronyms in education, local education administration, gets a certain amount of money from the state based on how many students they have. And then a lot of school districts will supplement that with especially places like Wake County and Charlotte-Mecklenburg, Durham, all the bigger school systems pay their teachers a little bit more, leaving some of the rural schools behind a little bit in terms of that supplement. But anyway, as it goes to charter schools, it has to do with how many students you have. That's how much money you have to operate the school. And then as a charter school, there's a lot fewer regulations. You can spend that money in a lot of different ways. They don't have to offer transportation, don't have to offer school lunches, for example, for students who qualify for free and reduced price lunch. Some charter schools do, but freed from a lot of those regulations, they're open to do a lot of different types of things. A lot of those folks, you know, a charter is essentially just a license from the school that allows you to run that school, and then they have to go through the process of getting it a couple of years.
What about supervision and oversight? Certainly public schools have to operate by certain rules. There's a state school superintendent and their office that oversees this. What about charter schools?
That's where it varies greatly. From state to state, there are some schools where charter schools, if they're even allowed, are very regimented. And North Carolina used to fit into that category. There were a lot of not regulations, but the process to get a charter was not an easy one. There was that 100 school cap that you mentioned. And really, the charter school advisory board that was in place was pretty tough on schools. They made sure that they had their financial situation set. They made sure that their curriculum was set. They looked at those things pretty closely. Other states have not done that in the past. Florida, Arizona, Texas, Ohio, sort of most notably, they have 500 or more charter schools in some of those states. Very loose regulations. Some of the charter schools there have succeeded. Some have sort of failed miserably and sort of, you know, in an explosive fashion, if you will. North Carolina's sort of going that route where we're sort of at this crossroads of that school advisory group I was talking about essentially was disbanded by the General Assembly this summer. They're going to reconstitute it with you know, the people who are going to be on it now are going to be chosen by the governor and by the you know, head of the Senate and head of the House, all Republicans who are more favorable to less regulation of the charter schools. So as the number of these letters of intent and applications increase, it's going to be very interesting to keep an eye on just how regulations are going to be enforced. But also, how tough is this application process going to be? How closely are they going to look at these people?
Well, tell us about the applications. How many so far and who's applying and what does it look like the landscape might be if they all get their charters?
Well, there are currently 127 charter schools in the state serving about 65,000 students or so. 26 are slated to open in 2014. And, you know, from that 26, there were, you know, three times that many that originally had intended to open. And so that advisory council sort of pares it down pretty well. And by the time those schools are ready to open, you know, it's gone only about a third that filled out that initial letter of intent. That 170 number, that letter of intent to open in 2015, and how much they're going to get looked at, how high a percentage of those 170 actually open, certainly not all 170 will open. But there is a process now, and a lot of charter school groups have started consulting with these folks so that they're getting better applications and better understanding of what it takes to run a charter school and to get the charter. How closely the Board of Education, you know, which essentially has all the oversight to look at these charter school applicants, is going to really do their due diligence. There's a little bit of money for some new people in the State Office of Charter Schools to help look at some of these things and manage the current charter schools, not that much. Maybe a person or two. So that's, you know, imagine that many schools and and having just three or four people in an office to manage that. So it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be interesting how the financial situation is really the one that undoes a lot of charter schools. You know, they're underperforming. Maybe they're serving low-income students. They're not getting money outside of what they get from the state. And there really are two classes of charter schools, those that are not just get the state money, but then go out and raise their own money, either from grants, from the Gates Foundation, for example, or from local donors. And then there's the other group that don't. They only get the money that they get from the state. And that's much more – it's not much. And that's much more difficult to run a school.
So is this low regulation idea that we see now through the legislature and the governor's office an idea that we will let the market decide? If you're a bad school, people will stop going there after 2 or 3 years and they'll figure it out. And then 2 or 3 years down the line, they'll say, hey, this is not such a good idea. I think I'll pull my child out. 3 years later.
That's right. And and you've sort of highlighted both the actual argument and the problem. The argument is, look, parents know what they're doing. They can choose schools for their own kids. If they don't like the school, they pull their kid. The school doesn't get the money. Sort of the very much the open market. Some will be winners. Some will be losers. The problem, of course, that's pointed out by anyone with kids or anyone who watches education is, you know, you're not making widgets. You're not making toasters. A kid who goes to a bad school for 3 years can really be undone for that, you know, especially if it's elementary school. Imagine third through fifth grade, you know, and then that student is ill-served by a poor school. Suddenly now they're in a situation where they're trying to go through middle school. They're behind. And once you're behind in school, it's really, really hard to get back. So charter schools have had this problem across the country, at some of those states we mentioned. As they closed, and you know, there's a really fascinating story just this last week in Kinston Academy Charter School, got a notification on Thursday. They sent a notification to parents, we're closing tomorrow. 200 or so kids had to suddenly go find another school for the next week, had a weekend to go find a new school. That school had all kinds of financial problems. They were being looked at by the State Office of Charter Schools. And when a charter school fails, it fails sort of spectacularly like this, and suddenly all those kids are dumped now either on another charter school or back into the public school
system. There's a wacky Wednesday for you.
Yeah, that's a difficult situation.
When you get that letter. So, but the other side of this is, but if you take off the regulations, stop telling schools what to do, some of them are going to pioneer some brand new ideas, and those schools are going to be in the vanguard of the next wave of education reform.
Yeah, it's really important to not look at that all charter schools are the same or that all charter school operators are the same. They are not. In fact, they're wildly different, more so than even traditional public schools, which because of regulations have to adhere to a little more sense of conformity, if you will, which is a lot of reason like people don't like traditional public schools and want to seek out a charter school option. Many charter schools, and this was especially true in the sort of the beginning of the movement around the country and here in North Carolina, the charter schools were started by educators who felt somewhat constricted maybe in the traditional public school system, wanted to start their own school to test out maybe what they had learned and wanted to try in some different curriculum areas or in some different teaching method areas. They're nonprofits, educator-driven, charter schools, devoted to education as much as any educational institution you can find. At the same time, there are charter schools that are owned and operated by for-profit entities. Now, they have a nonprofit board here in North Carolina, and then they hire an education management organization to come in and run the school. But among that 170 letters of intent, you see a wide variation. Educators in rural communities that want to make a difference with at-risk kids to online only, going to take that money and you know, does it cost $7,000 or $8,000 to educate a child only online and only pay teachers that it might have 50 or 60 kids? Probably not. And there's some profit to be made there. So it's a wildly different landscape. Not all charter schools are created equal. They're not run equally. There are some really, really good, effective charter schools, and there are some really, really bad, ineffective charter schools.
And as you point out, the state really hasn't created the infrastructure to analyze, evaluate all of this, both in the application process and the front end, and then ongoing to see whether or not they're performing at all. So that's kind of part of the problem is, these things may be happening, but without creating an infrastructure, how are we going to know?
Right. And where the state has been able to do that is mostly on the financial side. If a charter school is running a $150,000 deficit, that's easy to see. But if they're failing students, that's more difficult to see because, let's say, and a lot of charter schools are segregated and they serve only low-income or only upper-income students, only black students or only white students. A lot of the time, charter schools are more segregated than traditional public schools in this state. So if they are already serving low-income, at-risk kids and they're performing at the same as the local elementary school but still, quote, failing those kids, it's a harder thing to be able to judge or to regulate. If you can regulate it at all. But you can see when a school is failing financially. That's very easy. And that's when most charter schools have deemed to be failures.
So these new applications now that have come in, are they concentrated in certain areas geographically in the state?
Somewhat. Although because it's such a large number, there are a lot in sort of some unserved areas. But, you know, more than 30 of them are in Mecklenburg County. You know, almost a dozen are in Wake County. So, or 20 out of 20 are in Wake County. 12 are in Durham. So you see that there are areas where charter schools have sort of taken root. Durham is a perfect example. A lot of charter schools in Durham serving a variety of different types of students. But when a charter school – and that makes some difference, right? Durham's a big school district. It's not a huge school district. And when you have 12 or more charter schools, it makes a difference. And you see students. And you see school districts react by essentially trying to compete more in some level, market a little bit better, try to, you know, with some magnet schools, create some special programs that students may and parents may like. But where the impact really comes in is in a rural community, because a charter school can come in, you know, have a moderate number of students, and that's a significant amount of both students and money that goes out of the public schools. And you have to think about the types of kids who may seek out a charter school. The charter school investigation period by families and all that can be time consuming and requires a parent to spend the time. And if parents are that involved, the kids tend to be more involved in school. It just sort of follows. So you're losing not only the money and the kids, but probably the most involved parents as well.
So if I'm a parent and I'm considering a charter school, what am I looking for and how do I find that information?
Well, you know, I've been through this as a parent myself. I've seen a lot of other parents go through this. And so what you want to look for in a charter school is not a whole lot different than what you might look for in a traditional public school, but you have to decide sort of what kind of environment might best suit your child and obviously go seek out that environment. So that it requires you to visit the school and to know the people who run the school. So if you know the school, it's in a neighborhood or it's, you know, nearby, and you can go and visit as many times as you can. And charter schools usually tend to be pretty open to this, more so than traditional public schools, which aren't, quite frankly, used to giving a lot of tours. They're getting better at it, but that's not just something they've ever had to do. They're doing it now. So that's really the most important thing because, as we all know, not just statistics can lie, but I can come in here right now and tell you and give you any argument you want and have a ream of statistics to back it up. That's just how education works. I could tell you that all schools are failing and here's a book that will tell you why. And I could tell you that students have never been achieving higher in America. Here's why. It just education statistics can back up anything. The same goes for charter schools. They can always show you how they've done better with some students or not so with others. But really, it's going to boil down to you visiting and to figuring out who is running this school. The first thing you can do is go look in the charter school websites. I'll have this. Who's on the board of directors? And look those people up. Find out who they are. And a lot of times that'll give you a good sense of what they value and what kind of school they're trying to create.
So even if these charter schools open their doors in 2015, is it going to mean a change? I'm wondering because June Atkinson is state school superintendent, and she says she's more concerned with the introduction of opportunity scholarships, $4,200 school vouchers for low-income kids who attend private schools. That's a whole different program.
That's a whole different thing, and there's essentially some issues with it that are similar in that, you know, you're losing students out of the traditional public school system also means that revenue goes out of the traditional public school system, and that's a concern. And it's a question of regulation. But charter schools are regulated. We know you can go to ncreportcards.org and look up the charter school and at least see student test scores. Now, that's a piece of the puzzle, and it's usually a pretty big puzzle. But private schools are completely unregulated. They don't have to take any tests they don't want to take. They don't have to tell you grades. I mean, private schools can do whatever they want. And that's the point that Superintendent Atkinson and other folks have made is that now we're providing funds, $4,200 per student, to take that money and go to a private school. The majority of private schools in North Carolina are Christian-based private schools. There are independent private schools, but the vast majority, and they all cost more than $4,200. They all cost $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 mostly, and some go up to as high as $20,000 or $30,000 a year. But this is really designed for low-income kids to be able to attend the sort of, you know, those private schools that are somewhat more affordable. Those schools, parents won't know how their kids are doing unless they are able to get involved and figure out and make a connection with that school. But in terms of statistics and in terms of taxpayers being able to see if their taxpayer money in terms of these vouchers are going to the right, are having some sort of impact and are being utilized well, we won't know. And that's part of the regulation question.
So even in terms of school statistics and you know, our report cards on dropout rates and testing and all of that,
right,
we won't know, and they're not part of that. So does then this encourage then more private schools because we've got more money flowing in that direction?
That's right. And now you've got a situation where not only sort of the educational entrepreneurs are looking at charter schools, education entrepreneurs may be looking at starting more private schools. Maybe they'll affiliate with some group that is known in the community and then start a private school because that money will be less, I don't want to say traceable, but essentially now you don't have, you have less regulation to have to worry about to prove that you're doing a good job. Now, that's looking at it from a very negative standpoint. There are a lot of people who run private schools who do a tremendous job, but they don't have to give their students tests. And a lot of parents like that, quite frankly. They want to get out of the testing culture. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of tests that occur in the public school system. Anybody who has, you know, students in the traditional public schools knows that those tests create a lot of anxiety with students and teachers. There's a merit pay system coming down the pike in North Carolina for teachers. Now that they've gotten rid of tenure, that's what they want to replace it with in the years to come. And that's going to be tied to test scores in some, on some level. We know that's going to happen. That's what other states have done. That testing culture is only going to get more angst-ridden, more, there's going to be more stress on it in the public schools. Some people don't like it. They go to private schools to get away from it.
Dave, thanks so much. Always good to talk with you.
My pleasure.
Dave DeWitt, WNC's Raleigh Bureau Chief and Education Reporter. That's our program for today. Thank you for listening. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.